What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to episode number 17 of the Crafted Podcast, weekly podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, leather, electronics, and more. New shows come out every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. And if you want to check us out on social media, we're at Crafted Podcasts. Also just started a new Patreon, which we are having a lot of fun with. I have an awesome patron over there, Make, Build, Modify, who I'm sure if you listen to other woodworking podcasts, you've probably heard his name around. So thank you so much to Justin there. And last, we've got a new app. It's available on iOS and Android. You can live stream the show, do the live chat with us, and stream old episodes as well. So definitely check that out. And so we're joined by a very special guest today. We've got William Walker from William Walker Co. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Also, of course, as always, we got James Wright from Wood by Wright. What's up, James?
Not too much. Why, thank you for asking.
And Zach Herberholz from ZH Fabrications. What's up, man?
Hey.
Cool. Well, excited to have, I guess, what is this, our third guest? This should be fun, right? Yeah, we've had Bob and, it's been...
who's our first? Oh, yeah, we had Chris.
Yeah, yeah. I always like the guest episodes. I think they're... You know, it's nice to hear from somebody that's not us. We talk a lot, so I guess
all we talk about is Keller theory.
I only care what you have to say, so it's kind of a burden to have these strangers on board.
Well, I'm honored to be here, guys.
Also,
there's some big names I was joined with.
Yeah, man, one of the biggest for sure in our whole crowd. So, just by the way, Will, if you don't know, you can check out our live chat on the website, and you can kind of interact with the live audience. I don't know, I know I have crappy internet too, so I don't know if yours is good enough to support both, but you can give it a shot. So, the live chat is always a lot of fun. So, who wants to kick us off?
Or you can live chat on the app.
Yeah, or on the app. The app might be even better for that, actually. So, Will, since you're the guest, you want to kick us off what we're working on?
Yeah, sure. I'm working on a Rubo workbench out of some 8-quarter red oak slabs that I'm cutting down into 5-inch laminations, and it's kind of kicking my butt.
Yeah, I've been seeing you posting those, man. Those look that looks like a lot of work.
They're pretty heavy.
Yeah, man. Just wait till you get it glued up, man. I had started a Rubo build with hard maple and then like decided to go another direction after the first like 3 pieces were glued together, and it is amazing how much basically like a 6x4 of hard maple that's like 90 inches long weighs. It's just a freaking beast.
Yeah, I'm going on the Chris Schwartz side of it. Is make it as heavy as you can and hope you don't have to move it.
Yeah. So are you going to do the split top? I know we were like discussing this on Facebook.
Yeah, I haven't decided yet. I know me, and I'm like, my shop is the messiest shop ever. And so I feel like
absolutely no contest there.
I might do that. I'm definitely going to do the chisel rack in the middle where you can just drop chisels in and it'll catch it. But I don't know if I'm going to do the split top. It's going to depend on how wide the top is after I get everything milled flat and glued up together.
Cool. That's cool, man. I don't think I've heard of anybody taking slabs and turning them into a Rubo. So that'll be cool.
Yeah, use what you got, man.
Yeah, yeah. That's our show topic. So if you guys want to hear more about that,
what kind of footprint is your shop, by the way, Will?
My footprint, it's a 2,000 square foot basement that I split down the middle, and so my wife has a half, and I have a half, and it's pretty open. I've got some lolly columns, holding the house up, that kind of get in the way. But
did you say lolly columns?
Lolly columns, yeah, lolly columns, right?
Never heard of that. That's a fun word, though.
Big steel posts that hold the floor box to your first floor up.
Ah, yeah, I got one of those in my shop, too. They're very annoying to work around.
Yeah, I've got 3 of them, I think. So
Nice. That's cool.
Figure.
Yeah, they're, I did have my electrician like add outlets to it at least, so it's like semi useful. Because that's the one weird thing about my shop is there's really like it's 40 feet wide and like 25 feet deep, so I have very little actual like wall space to use. So like trying to put tools in the middle of the area, there's nowhere to really plug it. So that was, and I have a drop ceiling, so I can't like put outlets in the ceiling. So it is a bit tricky. So actually, the post with the outlets is kind of perfect.
Are you? You're a fancy pants with you have an electrician?
Well, so I lucked into an electrician. So I called an electrician company, and they sent out this guy, and he quoted me like, you know, it's going to be like $1,000 or some ridiculous figure to add two 220-volt like outlets or circuits to the shop because I didn't have 220-volt service. And so we got to talking, and he was asking me about what I do, and I was like, yeah, I do, you know, YouTube stuff and some web stuff. And he was like, oh, you build websites? And I was like, yeah, I do, actually. And he's like, well, I need a website. So evidently, like, some side project of his he needed a website for. So we ended up, like, trading work for work, and it was outstanding because, yeah, I've got some new equipment coming in the next, like, week, and I need more power and more outlets. So that stuff is super expensive. I was amazed at how expensive all that crap is. It's unbelievable, and I do not know what I'm doing when it comes to electricity, so I would feel very unsafe doing that myself. So yeah, I see you you've got weird like Romex hanging all over the place in your shop, Will.
Yeah, I do. Because it was good enough for me. What's that?
So you and me both. I have my table saw. I have like a, I don't know how many OSHA violations there are, but like my shop is a death trap.
Wait a second. You need electricity in your shop?
Yeah, seriously. James doesn't even have an outlet. That's funny.
I tried to channel my James today. It was super windy here in Virginia, and so power lines are down all over the place, and my power went out right when I was trying to work on the Rubo bench. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll just use hand tools. And no, that didn't work at all. And it was dark.
Hand tools by candlelight.
Doing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That lovely video you put out today.
Yeah, that was a good one, man. The saw sharp.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. That was good.
Thanks. Yeah. It was a good experiment.
Yeah, that's
a topic that's close to my heart.
Yeah, James loves his sharpening, and I am like the polar opposite. I don't. I just buy new tools, you know, just throw it away. It's whenever
table saw blade dulls, he just gets a whole new saw.
Get a new table saw. It's too much trouble. Cool. Well, who wants to? Who else wants to talk about what they're working on?
I went and did something stupid this last week and actually broke my Rubo frame saw, which is like the pride and joy tool of my shop. And so I'm in the middle of, well, I made it quickly out of material that I had on hand just to get it done and show how it was done. And then I fell in love with the saw and realized the things that I needed to do to make it better. And so now this is my opportunity to actually do what I wanted to do in the first place. And build it precisely the way I want it. So I'm enjoying that.
Nice.
But the other thing I have going on is this small project that I have going on the side called a dresser.
The never-ending dresser.
Yes. I cut my first dovetail today.
Nice. Yeah, that piston fitting video was really good, man. I enjoyed watching that. Because, you know, even if you're not a hand tool guy, that was super applicable, obviously. You know, just custom fitting things like that, and the best process to do that, and that was good.
It was a fun one. A lot of good response from that video.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. That was cool. Zach, how about you, man? What you working on?
Man, I wish I had something new.
like a dresser?
Yeah.
Seriously. Well, like James been working on that since like episode one.
Yeah, but you're still putting out like new content,
true,
new videos. I haven't put out a video in like a month. Like I have the giveaway video and like the channel pass before that, and then the Blacksmith Rose 10,000 subscribers. Like my last three videos haven't been build videos, and I've been plenty busy. I just, you know, I actually started the chairs today, which is man, it's going to be a lot of work. I didn't know. I mean, I had everything mocked up and sketched up, and then when I go like build it, I throw some stuff together, like just out of some scrap wood, to just visualize the dimensions. And what's awesome is, well, first of all, what's really weird about dimensions, I don't know, if I'm sure you guys run into this. Like, the first time you build a table, you're like 29 to 31 inches, and then you pull out your tape measure, and if there's not a table in the room, you'll hold it up, and you'll go, there's no way that's right. That's way too low. If anybody listening hasn't built a table, yep, go into a room without a table, take a tape measure, hold it up to 29 inches, and imagine that's where a table sits, and you'll go, there's no way. That is so low. That's ridiculous. But it's true. It's, then you'll go measure your table and you go, holy crap, that's, you know, 20 to 31 inches. It doesn't look, it just, it's weird. So with a chair, it's like that times 10, because you're dealing with like a seat height of 17 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a tape measure, or if you're good at guessing, look at the floor and put your hand what you think 17 inches. Well, I guess you're probably sitting in a chair, so it won't be that.
It's about this high.
Yeah.
But really low. I mean, you'd look at it and you'd go, no, there's no way a chair seat is 17, 18 inches off the ground. That is way too low. That's ridiculous. But no, it is. So yeah, I built this frame, and it's just been really strange. So I decided to take it kind of a different way. So I bought some really small 3/4 inch steel tube, and I'm just going to make an ergonomical model tomorrow. Hmm. Where, because I'm building this for a client and comfort is a priority. So the first thing I'm going to do is mock this thing up. It's going to be hideous. It's just going to be a box with a seat on it and some cushions, just to figure out where we want to put the armrests and where the seat height should be and the angle of the seat and the angle of the backrest. There's just a lot of factors that, no matter how much you design it in SketchUp, when you actually go to put it together, you second guess everything. And especially when you look at it and it just looks ridiculous. It looks like a chair for 7-year-olds until you get it all together. It just looks tiny. And, so I went to the store today and took a whole bunch of measurements of a whole bunch of different chairs and what I thought was comfortable. So that's the kind of stuff I've been working on. So that directly doesn't make for a good video, but it'll be a cool build when it comes out, because it's going to show the whole process from making the ergonomical model to making the prototype to taking the prototype apart, making a jig, and then cranking out 4 of these chairs. So it's definitely going to be an interesting build video. So I'm sure I went on way too long, but I still have more. I got some, I ordered some forge tools, like some tongs. And right when we started recording the podcast, I'm sure these guys flipped out, because it was like 8:59 and I just got out of my chair and ran to the front door, because
with
I
your
have
dog
a fork.
Barking.
What's that?
With your dog barking.
Yeah, it was just complete mayhem. But, yeah, I've been waiting for a big wood-fired Whitlock's forge, and it just showed up. So as soon as I'm done with this, I'm going to go open it. And
happiness.
That's exciting. That, and just selling a crap ton of blacksmith roses. So
I got an idea, Zach. You can make me some holdfasts for my new Rubo bench.
I've been meaning to respond to that comment. I saw it on my phone, so it didn't pop up, and I kept on forgetting to do that. Yeah, I want to do that. I want to build some holdfasts. That'd be a cool thing to sell.
Me too.
I want to build some for my bench too. I have 2 from Gramercy, and they're really nice. I like them, but it'd be way cooler if I made them myself.
It seems like the easiest thing to make too. It's like, take a round rod, pound an angle into it, and then flatten out one end. It's like pretty.
Well, forged holdfast just looks so much better than one that you get like from Gramercy. It's round rod hammered over.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's more to it, because, I mean, you have to use spring steel, and you probably have to get the quench and the heat treatment just right, so it isn't too hard and it's not too brittle, and it's because you got to smack on it. So that's something I've been delving into lately. It's just kind of in the whole realm of trying to get better at blacksmithing and more knowledgeable. Just all the metallurgical stuff is...
Yeah.
Really, really deep. I mean, like every metal is totally different. You need to, some of them are air hardened, air quenched, oil quenched. You have to know exactly what temperatures to forge at. You need to know exactly what temperature to quench it at for how long, and then what temperature to bring it back to, and then how long and what temperature to normalize it. So it's a really intricate process, and the tricky thing is it's different for every metal. So so it's intimidating, but I have some S7 tool steel on the way, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's been probably the biggest factor in me, like, not building knives yet, is because, like, every time I go to research that stuff, I just, you know, it's that, you know, paralysis by analysis thing. Like,
yeah,
you look at all these metals, and it's just ridiculous. And, like, even if you try to get a basic, you know, like an 01 or something like that, there's still, the problem is, even when you look at the heat treatment methods for that, there's like 9 different opinions, and all of them think that everybody else is wrong, and it's just so hard to figure out what should work. So it's that's interesting.
That's the other thing too, is I feel like that's the same with not just blacksmithing or metal work or whatever. It's the same with everything. It's the same with woodworking, and you don't really know until you jump in. I mean, I'm sure all of us on this podcast have had that moment to where you could sit in the chair and research and plan and think and strategize and do this and that. There's an endless supply of information. You'll never be able to digest it all until you just say, you know what? I'm going to focus on this corner or this little thing and just go with it and just jump in. So I'm going to mess around with some S7 for some drifts and, like punches and chisels, just doing really basic stuff. And then I bought some really high carbon steel that's very, you know, basic stuff. But, you know, yeah, even if I don't get it perfect, I mean, if you take a step back from whatever you're doing, whether it's wood or metal or whatever, it doesn't have to be perfect your first time. It doesn't ever have to be perfect. I think it's more important to do it. And as long as you're getting better and learning every time, it's a lot less intimidating if you don't have that ridiculous high expectations of doing it perfect the first time. It's the what's the elephant analogy, like how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah, one bite at a time.
Exactly.
yeah So what kind of high carbon steel did you get? Because I've been considering getting, just loading up on like 1095 for knife making and just working my way through the pile.
1056, I think, is what I got.
Okay. Where'd you get it? Because I know, like, I've been looking at New Jersey Steel Baron. He seems to be, like, the guy for knife makers, at least. But I don't know for other stuff.
I got it from, I think, Blacksmith Supply.
Oh, yeah. They're, I think 45 minutes from my house, I think.
Nice. Yeah, they're in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I ordered some. I did a lot of research on tongs. Because I have a pair that I made, and they suck.
Yeah. Good, I mean, good pair of tongs is unbelievably valuable, man.
Well, they work. They're good, but trying to make fire tongs without fire tongs is like, now that I have them, I could do a much better job. But they're called Wolf's Jaw tongs.
Okay.
And this guy makes them. I think it's Off Center is the brand that I bought. And I guess this guy makes them himself in America. And he has a really good warranty. And I'm just happy to support something that's, you know, handmade versus just out. So, and they're reasonably priced. So
cool. Yeah. That's a side of making that I do not really focus on enough, I think, because it makes me so, I just feel like I don't know anything. And, you know, like, I'm completely set up for knife making. Like, I purposely, like I have the belt grinder. I have, you know, like, I have a lot of those things that are kind of the requirements for doing that. And I really want to get into it, but I just need to order the dang steel and start.
I have none of that, and I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, the cool thing about being a maker or a craftsman is if you screw up, you just make another one.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you don't film, and you just delete all your video from the screw up.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, that's the problem, is like, now I film like everything, and I'm like, well, if I mess this up, then what is next week's project going to be? You know what I mean? Like, it's this weird cycle where I almost like just have to complete projects that I know I can actually complete. It's I don't know. It's a weird thing, but yeah. Anyway, I guess I'll talk about what I'm working on. Let's see. What am I working on? I put out the guitar stand video this past week, and that was pretty fun. That was a simple one, but, you know, really effective, and I'm really happy to have it because, like, as I said in the last show, like, when I go home and, you know, try to jam with people and stuff like that, I never have a place to put my guitar, so that was pretty fun. I'm still not sure what next week's video, like, basically the day you're hearing this, if you're an iTunes person, the video I published the day before this, I've got a couple things cooking. I've got a lot of things cooking, actually. So the river table, the glass just got finished being cut, so I'm going to go pick that up tomorrow. Yeah, I've also got three of those, like, Nelson benches, the kind of mid-century modern slatted hard maple benches. I'm building three of them, so one for me and two for my mom. And then I'm also building, like, a kid's step stool, and I'm going to do something kind of cool and put, like, the kid's artwork on the top step and, like, cover it in a layer of epoxy to kind of, like, you know, make the stool theirs. So I think that'll be kind of cool. It's for my niece. So I'm still not sure. Whichever one gets done by Tuesday, basically, is the one that will go out. So I've got, like, severe project ADD right now. I've been watching Will's your stuff with the Roubeau, and I have this pile of Southern Yellow Pine in my garage, and I'm like, oh, I just need to get down there and start ripping that all up. And I'm like, no, I've got like three other projects currently in the works, so I need to calm down. So yeah, it's I don't know. The benches have been particularly annoying because each bench has like 12 long slats and then four horizontal, like shorter slats. And so I'm making three of these. So it's like 40 something slats, and I ripped it all out of rough hard maple. So I had to like joint and plane and drum sand every single piece. And it's one of those like extremely repetitious builds that, because I'm building three of them, and I'm not really enjoying it.
Did you order up a thin kerf table saw blade yet?
No, huh? I flipped my breaker switch about seven times yesterday, probably. So I actually ordered up a new saw stop, so I'm upgrading to the ICS, the 3 horsepower. So I'm selling my current one.
Blade gets dull, he gets new saw stop.
Yeah. My shop has changed so much since I got, it's only been like 7 months since I got the one I have now, but like I was a complete like noob hobbyist like when I bought it previously, and now it's, you know, I'm making furniture and using a lot more hardwoods and stuff like that, so having a more powerful saw will be good all around. I mean, I'll definitely be experimenting with, you know, the thin kerf rip blades and stuff like that, but it was time, I think. So
I like how James went to cough and he accidentally hit the video button instead of the button.
Did I?
Yeah, you muted your video feed.
Your video just appeared and then we just heard a cough.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
So, I don't want you to see me cough.
I like your solution to problems. We're like, man, you really ought to try the thin curve saw blade. And he's like, no, I'm just going to keep the blade and get a new saw.
Evan, $60 versus like $4,000. Who cares? Well, that's the crazy thing is like these saws, they maintain their value like incredibly well. So, you know, between like getting a slight discount from SawStop and reselling the one I have now used, I mean, I'm going to barely spend any money to be able to upgrade to a much nicer saw. Well, not much nicer, but
what
a nicer saw.
For my Unisaw.
I don't know. Probably, I don't know. Those things are on Craigslist a lot.
They're awesome, though. I think it's like the most.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic table saw for sure. Oh, well, yeah. So it's exciting. A lot of shop changes going on. I've got my new dust collector coming. I guess it'll be here Monday. They were supposed to get it here by the end of this week. I'm annoyed because there's evidently an 8-hour assembly process for this Clearview Cyclone. So you have to like put together all these the cyclone's made out of like plexiglass, so you had to put it all together and then like silicone seal every little joint. So it just takes a long time. So I was hoping to be able to do that this weekend, but that's not going to happen. So
how many dust collectors have you had, man?
This is my second. I've only had.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just the Oneida before that.
Have more?
No, I. Yeah. The Oneida was.
My shop's like going to be an archaeology dig. Like when I move out, like there's like layers by months of crap on the floor.
Yeah.
I dig down real. Like sometimes I'll sweep up and I'll find like a piece of this like red dyed ash that I did like 6 months ago. I'm like, oh, that's still in here. I remember that.
Yeah.
You
really
sweep?
Yeah, but there's like corners and stuff that my broom doesn't conveniently get to. And then like, you know, when I use the air to try and blow stuff out of my shop, it just like collects in the corners. So.
Yeah. It just makes me really nervous. I don't know. I think the health aspect, obviously, like the more you read about that stuff, the more nervous you'll get. But then also like the metal stuff, you know, like one little errant spark sitting in a pile of dust is just a recipe for really bad things to happen. So, I don't know. That just, I think it stresses me out probably more than I need to, but it's my house. So, you know, if this was some outbuilding, you know, and it just burnt down and I could get an insurance check. But if my house burnt down with like my two cats in it, I think it would not be a good thing. So, yeah, that's I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. So
fun story. I lit the metal school that I learned to weld at on fire.
That is a fun story.
How did you do that? It's a metal school. Is everything not metal and concrete?
Yeah, so it was, you know, a metal building, and then I had my little welding, my MIG welding station, and, you know, the guy says, you know, run 100 beads, flip the piece over, run another 100, and then when you're done with that, run 100 more. And so I'm just, like, head down, just running beads of MIG, and I was right on the end. And on the other side of my station was a stack of moving blankets.
Oh, my God.
And so I didn't know that, and I was just throwing sparks on them, like, all day. And then next thing I know, like, there's smoke filling the whole place, and somebody goes, fire! And yeah, so we got the fire extinguisher out, and it was fun. You know,
in my metal shop, my teacher actually caught the building on fire.
Wow.
In class. I was very pleased.
That's hilarious.
Have you guys ever experienced, like, a boiled linseed oil fire?
Yeah.
Like the spontaneous combustion?
I haven't seen one. Like, it's on
once
my
on purpose,
list.
Once on accident.
Yeah, I know Danish oil definitely, it's a thing. Like, it there are well-documented cases of it happening.
And when it gets a little warmer, I'm actually going to do a video on it and show it in the fire pit out back.
You should have races, like, which one will combust faster and take bets.
Well, it has more to do with how well the rags are packed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they're spread out flat, there isn't enough heat contained. It doesn't stay close to the rag.
Yeah.
But if they're packed too tightly, then you don't get enough oxygen in it.
Yep. That's why like a lot of shops have metal trash cans just for their like oil finishing rags. But even that can cause issues. So yeah, that I always lay them out in my driveway and just put like a rock on them and, you know, so they don't like blow back into the shop somehow. Yeah, cool. Well, I guess let's get into our show topic. This should be an interesting one. I'm interested to see how we talk about this for a whole show topic, but I definitely think there's a lot of meat here. So basically we're going to talk about using materials we have on hand and trying to make those work versus going out and buying materials that are ready to roll for whatever project we're working on. So, obviously there's a lot of schools of thought to this, and I think you can save a lot of money by making what you have on hand work for you. So, yeah, who wants to start us off?
I actually run into this quite a bit with the hand tool world because people tend to be very, very picky when it comes to whenever you're making a hand tool because there's so much tradition behind them, like with a joiner's mallet. If you're in Europe, you have to make your joiner's mallet out of European beech. If you're in America, you have to make it out of hard maple. And that's the historical normal. But, I mean, in all honesty, what's it going to matter if you make it out of oak or beech or whatever? It's a mallet. You're going to bang it up, and if you break it, you make a new one. So yeah, I like to. What's that?
I built mine out of southern yellow pine, and I can't believe it is still like in the great condition. Yes. It blows my mind. That stuff does not get enough respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so...
A year almost, and I use it every day on stuff.
There's so much pickiness about what you have to use for a particular material or what is the best material for this particular project. And honestly, the amount of difference between most woods is so slight that if you have it on hand and you like the look of it, cool.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, you know, I've gotten into the habit of buying like large quantities of rough lumber when I find deals in them.
Yeah.
So it's like right now, if I'm going to build something, it's either going to be out of walnut or hard maple. And it doesn't really matter what it is. Like, those are the two materials I have on hand. That or like pure bond plywood, because those are like the three things I have a pretty decent abundance of in my shop. So it works out because those are three really good materials. But yeah, it's a lot more work. Like for these freaking Nelson benches, I could have gone to the home center and bought 1x2s. And that's what I'm actually designing, like, the project to work with, because, you know, for people who don't have table saws and, you know, ways to mill lumber effectively. So I'm basically taking this 8-quarter hard maple and ripping it into what is essentially 1x2s. And it is adding a ridiculous amount of work and, you know, turning a lot of this hard maple into sawdust in the process. So, it's tough, but... Then on the flip side, when you start looking at like what the board foot calculations are for the stuff at the home center, it's freaking ridiculous. Like, you're paying like $6 a board foot for like select pine, and that's just insane. That's more expensive than any domestic hardwood locally for me. Like, that's just crazy. So
I got all my white oak for 50 cents a board foot.
Yeah. Like,
nice.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And, you know, it's S4S, but it's also bowed as crap a lot of times, so it doesn't really matter if it's square. If it's like a curlicue, then it's not going to be particularly useful. So
you're never going to get anything with figure.
No.
Yeah. So that was the thing that I mean, you and me were talking about this on Facebook, Johnny, when I was talking about the Rubo top. I've got these massive cherry slabs that are 3 inches thick that I bought them for a project because I got a good deal on them, and then the project fell through, and so now I just have these bookmatched slabs, and I was going to use those for the top, but then I thought, well, 3 inches probably isn't thick enough for a Rubo top, and you know, I really want something thicker, maybe like 4.5 or 5 inches. So that's when I changed direction and changed to the red oak, which is what I had, because I had a bunch of trees milled. And you and me were talking about how southern yellow pine, you know, building a Rubo top out of southern yellow pine that you get at the home store would be like, you know, $100.
Yeah.
I did the math on this red oak that I had milled. I ended up with about 1,000 board feet after the mill day of red oak, white oak, silver maple. I think that's it. And I paid the guy $650. So the tabletop, the bench top came out to like $37. Wow. Or something like that.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think the other thing that predicament will put you into is that you tend to become a little more creative, sort of like what happens when you mess up with something on a project. It's that moment you get to be creative and try something new and add some intricacy.
Yep.
And when you work with what you have in your shop, you're doing the exact same thing of having to figure it out, and you end up coming up with something that you would not have originally that is a whole other level of inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of people who are like newer to woodworking, they assume that using these materials is just insanely expensive and just cost prohibitive in every way. And I think that's a pretty big myth, because really, again, when you compare this stuff to what you can get at your home center, that's not just like 2x4s. It's really not that much more, if more at all. And yes, you do need a lot of times a way to mill the lumber, but again, you can get into that stuff for you know, relatively inexpensive if you buy stuff used and that kind of thing, or use hand tools. And yeah, I think that's something that a lot more woodworkers should use more of, is nicer hardwoods. Because, man, it is so cool to buy some random pile of rough lumber that looks really gnarly, and then you go home and you mill it up, and like you got some crazy beautiful curl, or you know, just amazing figure that you never would have known was kind of living under there. And it's just one of the most rewarding aspects is when you kind of uncover those like buried treasure, basically. It's pretty incredible.
And you make a lot of relationships too with local sawyers. You know, they're people who saw wood for a living always seem to have the most character, I've found, where, so if I take a day or a half a day to take a field trip to my sawyer, you know, when I load up my trailer with, you know, a bunch of stuff that he cut a year ago, I always come back laughing. And it's way less expensive than if you go to, you know, like, you know, the home center where they're selling a 1x6 8-foot piece of red oak for $30, and you're like, what?
Or like Woodcraft and Rockler, man, those places will kill you with their lumber prices. I mean, it's unbelievable, like the stuff that they charge.
That's what's terrible about living in, hold on, go ahead, keep going.
Yeah,
I think Craigslist is also a fantastic place.
Sure.
It's, you see these piles of someone inherited a barn, and there's 1,000 board feet of something, and they're selling it for nothing.
Yeah, that's been aging for like 20 years.
$1 a board foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, air dry in a garage and 30 years dry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that stuff, I mean, I'm sure obviously that's very regional, and I'm guessing South Florida probably doesn't have a lot of those deals hanging around. So, Zach, it's time to move.
I'm pretty much stuck to wood. And they know that you have no other options. They almost like scowl at you when you walk in the door, like a sexual predator. Like when I met it, like you have no other options.
Have you looked at like Miller? Because I mean, like Bell Forest and places like that. Yeah. I wonder if that would end up being cheaper. Because man, like I've never been to a Rockler store. I've only been to a Woodcraft once or twice because there's none in my area. But I was shocked at the
cost. I paid $420 for a cherry slab that was about 5 feet long and maybe 4-quarter.
Dude.
By 20.
Oh my gosh. I paid $50 for that like 2 weeks ago. That's what I'm building the river table out of. And that was probably, that was at a commercial like storefront woodworking store here, actually where we're having our meetup, which I need to plug real quick before I forget. Actually, I totally had forgotten to add that to the show notes. Anybody in the Western North Carolina vicinity, we are having a meetup with me and James and Zach on April 2nd at 6 p.m. here in Asheville, North Carolina at Asheville Hardware, which is probably one of my favorite woodworking stores in the area. They sell a ridiculous number of amazing slabs. So if any of you are in the area, I'd love to have you. We have an event set up on our Facebook page if you guys want to kind of RSVP so we can get, you know, a head count or whatever. But just want to throw that in there before I forget while I'm talking about Asheville Hardware, the slab place.
Yeah, also, no, earlier point, also, if there's any of our listeners who are like entrepreneurs and looking for business ventures to start up, or truck drivers, like throw some slabs in your truck next time you come down to Florida, and you could set up a pretty good business with no competition at all.
Do you ever work with palm trees, Zach?
No, I don't think you can do anything. It's like mocking me. Like I've said that in a previous podcast. Like I walk outside and it's just the only trees we have are completely worthless to the best of my knowledge. And then there's cypress, which I've learned.
Yeah.
I wondered why it was so expensive. And one of our listeners chimed in and said that most of it's all protected, so you can't cut it down.
Yep.
That's why it's so expensive, is because the only stuff you can buy is the stuff that was cut down like hundreds of years ago. So that's what we have. We have palm trees, which are worthless, and then we have a ton of cypress, which is illegal to cut down.
I'm gonna really make you jealous. So the guy that I got hooked up with, my slab guy, I do barter work with him. So I take photos for his website, and he gives me slabs. And B, he has the contract with Montpelier, who is it's the home of James Madison. Which, so it's all these really old trees, and if one of them gets lightning struck or something, he takes it down for them. So he's got cypress and lightning struck black walnut and cedar of Lebanon and all this crazy stuff.
Wow.
Oh my.
Artisan lightning struck black walnut.
Yeah, that's right.
That sounds beyond hipster.
Extra. The holes are extra.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Did you guys ever see that Charmin artisan toilet paper?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Did you guys ever see the artisan firewood one?
Oh, yes. The dude with the little, I was just about to say that, with the little like fingernail trimmers, like trimming off the little splinter. That was, that was like at my previous job, like they thought I was that guy, basically. So that they sent me that video, like saying, "Oh, well, here's a video of you," essentially. And
I get the toilet paper one at least once a week.
Yeah. I like the it was a Portlandia episode where it was like the girl's husband makes furniture, and like because they're like, "We need like more manliness. Like, what are we gonna do for our magazine?" They're like, "Oh, my husband builds furniture," so they had him do like this expose, and he brings out this furniture, and it's just complete crap. It's like falling. It's, I don't know, I'm good, way off topic, but it's just funny.
That's funny. Well, we got anything else to add to this topic? I mean, I think we've kind of covered it.
Was it the reuse? So see, I just hoard stuff. Like that's my biggest problem. I never use any of it. I'm always like
a pile.
I've had the same like garbage like ideas in my head that I'm like going to use all of this stuff for. I'm like, oh, I can use this for this project that I'm never ever going to actually get around to doing. So I have boxes or like those plastic crates that you get from like Home Depot and stuff, full of like old, like my grinding discs when I wear them down to like the last inch, and like sanding wheels that have no sandpaper, just complete crap that I'm sure I'm never going to use.
I collect turning blanks, and I don't even have a lathe.
Yet.
Yeah. I'm sure you could make one out of a sapling, James. Like, you know, didn't they used to do that in the old school? Where they'd tie a rope to a sapling. And
coming up this summer.
So I have a rule in. So I have a rule in my shop. It's a self-imposed. It's more of a guideline. It's a loose rule. I don't follow it that closely. But before I buy new wood or new lumber, I've got to use some of the wood that's in my shop or find a project to use that wood on. And I had a debate a long time ago with a friend who's got a barn full of, you know, wood, that crazy, crazy figured wood that he won't use any of it, because it's each piece is so special, and I just don't think that does the wood justice.
Yep.
Like when I used, I don't know if you guys saw my desk for the office build, but I put curly white oak drawer fronts on the drawers, and this guy like got totally on me about it and was like, "I can't believe you use curly white oak for drawer fronts." And I was like, "It's for my desk that I see every day.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't I use something cool and awesome and nice?"
You point them to my dresser.
But
yeah, seriously. I mean,
I don't know. Different schools.
Well, I mean, it does grow on trees.
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
Well, it's that collector mentality, right? I mean, there's like every hobby you can get into. Like, the company I worked for before was a cigar company. We'd see people who would hoard these boxes of cigars for, you know, decades. It's like, they're not getting any better after a certain extent, you know, like they're just dead leaves. They're designed to be smoked and basically destroyed during the process of enjoying them. Same with any good whiskey or beer, or, I mean, like that whole collector mentality. And I've grappled with that a little bit, you know, especially when you first get into hobbies and it's like, oh, I got this really special thing that, you know, this is the first time I've had this special thing. And but then you realize it's like, okay, well, you know, you use it, you enjoy it, and then you go get some more. And that's what it's all designed for. I mean, we're, you know, our whole job is just take big pieces of wood and make them smaller, right? So, you know, we gotta use them up. So, yeah, it's that mentality I don't understand. I mean, I do have some pieces hanging around my shop that I haven't used, but mostly it's because, like, it's weird stuff. Like I was saying in the chat here, like, I've got some zebra wood, but I don't know where to use zebra. I bought it to make a cutting board out of, which was just really a weird idea. Zebra wood's so odd that it needs to be, like, the focal point of a build, I feel like. And I just haven't had something that I felt like needed it yet, so... It's
zebra wood is expensive, at least in Virginia, yes. Because I only have one importer, and he sells 4-quarter zebra wood for like $19 a board foot, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, that's about
so.
Yeah.
So I don't have any zebra wood.
Yeah, I bought this little piece. So
I paid like $22 for like maybe a 3x3x6-inch block in Florida.
Oh my gosh, dude. You seriously need to move, man.
I have no options. It's not like I don't know better.
Well, mail order, man. I really think mail order would save you money, actually. The hearing
I've never seen what it would cost to have slabs mailed to me or lumber mailed to me. I can't imagine shipping would save me money, but maybe
you gotta buy in bulk. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you bought a large enough quantity, you know, like what a pallet is not going to really be any more expensive. Like, once you have one slab on a pallet, like 20 slabs is not going to be any really more expensive for freight.
Well, yeah, but I don't have that kind of money just sitting around.
Well, yeah, I know, but I don't know.
I can't just be like blade or table saw.
Well, but when you're saying $400 for a cherry slab, okay, if you could get them at $50, then you could buy 10 slabs at $50 a pop. You know what I mean? Like,
most of my stuff is dictated by, you know, most of my work is client work. So it's like, for me, it's a matter of what can I get these materials for and how quick can I get it done? And it's, I guess I just need to build up the capital to where I can start hoarding more stuff that I'm not using on top of.
Yeah. Zero. Zero. I need a bigger scale. Yeah. It's, it is nice though. Because when you get into that kind of client build, you know, in the middle of a project, it's like money is just a way different kind of issue. Because, like, you need something fast. You're like, okay, that's good enough. You know, like, that's within reason. And, you know, you end up overpaying a lot.
The good news about the client work is, like, they end up footing the bill.
Oh, yeah, they pay for it, for sure. They pay
for it. So, I mean, it's good for me, but bad for them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it'd be great. I'd love to be able to, you know, build them, make the same money and sell, build the product for cheaper. I'd probably have a lot more work, but it's the rates I have to charge just in materials in Florida is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, I guess we've got a couple Q and A's or Q's, I guess. We've got the A's from Joel Fogerhold. I don't really know how to pronounce it. He had put it in his previous email, but I forgot to write it down. But anyway, so he says he's trying to finish up some shelves for his bathroom, and he's having a hard time choosing a finish because his shop is very cold, close to minus 20 Celsius, which... I don't know how cold that is, but it's pretty cold, I'm pretty sure. And so...
It's
cold, freezing. Yeah. So
it's not zero, it's freezing. It's above freezing.
Well, no, negative 20.
Oh, negative 20.
Yeah, holy minus 20. Crap. Yeah, so that's pretty chilly. He says there's a sauna connected in the same building, so he could put some products in there for fast drying, or he could pick another finish that doesn't have an odor and just dry it inside. That's an interesting question. I don't really know. Drying in a sauna, I feel like, would have all kinds of issues with the wood, like warping.
Yeah, with moisture.
All messed up.
Well, is it a dry sauna or a wet sauna?
Yeah. I feel like either way, it would be bad. I mean...
Anything that's a significant fast change.
Yeah.
And you don't want to...
Humidity, like, I think you need to...
Even if it's a dry sauna, you don't want to take it much over like at 90 degrees for most finishes.
Yeah.
Fahrenheit, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if it's for the bathroom, like a finish you can put on inside that's not going to stink. I mean, obviously, like, to me, shellac is an easy one, but I don't know. I haven't used it a ton, so I don't know its moisture resistance properties, how good or bad.
What about polycrylic? You know, water-based.
Yeah, exactly. Water-based polys.
Yeah, like General Finishers High Performance, same kind of deal. Well, then
it also depends on, you know, what do you say is, does this stink? Because I personally love the smell of boiled linseed oil, so does my wife. And so we like doing that, but other people think that it is absolutely the most atrocious smell in the world. So,
and there's also like furniture wax, like actual, like good quality wax, can like paste wax type stuff. I've used Brie wax on a few projects, and it's actually offers really surprisingly good protection, in my opinion.
Yep.
You could also do a mineral oil beeswax, which would be food safe, but there's no smell at all to that.
Yeah, I think to me, I would avoid things. Well, I would probably just avoid most oil-based finishes. Like, I know Armor Seal or Waterlox or even Danish Oil, they're going to have pretty significant odors. Oil-based polys. I mean, that's probably stay away. But yeah, water-based stuff I think would probably be great. But for a bathroom, I mean, yeah, I feel like mineral oil and beeswax could be cool because a lot of the stuff in the bathroom, you know, like if you're going to be storing your toothbrush on it or something, that could be good. So, yeah. So he's got, yeah. So we've also got a joke of the week. This is the first one in a while from Nick. I don't know if any of you early listeners remember the joke of the week segment. It tapered off very quickly. But we did get an email from Nick. So he says, it's actually pretty good. He says, what do you call a planer that takes extra bites at the ends of your boards? Wesley, of course, because it's Snipes.
Nice.
Thought that was pretty clever. So thanks, Nick. That was that was a good one. So, I guess let's move on to what we're watching. What do you guys got?
I've been watching Robin Lewis. He has a YouTube channel. And he just put out a video on deconstructing an end table. And the project itself was kind of interesting in a great way of just a simple construction. But his video was phenomenal. I was just one of those ideas for a video of why in the world haven't I ever thought about this, where he actually goes through the build in reverse. And I really, really like the way it came out. Cool video, and his channel is always kind of interesting.
Yeah, he does a really Robin's a good dude. Job. Yeah. Yeah, he's got a great channel.
We did that dramatic log cut challenge thing together.
Yeah, where is he at? He's in New Zealand or Australia?
He's in Australia, but he just moved across. He was in either Sydney or Melbourne, and he just moved across Australia.
Nice. Yeah, he does really cool. He's really been upping his like cinematography lately too. He did like a planter box build recently that like super, super impressive. He had some cool time lapses and just really nice work. A lot higher production value than your kind of standard DIY video. So, yeah, definitely recommend him. Will, how about you?
So this isn't woodworking or making related, but I just recently discovered the Nerdwriter, which he's got like over a million subscribers, and I don't know how I didn't know about him, but his stuff is just really incredible. So yeah, he's an essayist and then does really like infographic videos to go along with his essays. a lot of Chris Schwartz. I've been really into just kind of binge watching him because he's the same mentality that I think that I have, where instead of painstakingly worrying about, you know, thousands of an inch here, or, you know, making sure everything is just perfect. He's like, it's wood. It's going to move. It's good enough. Just start making stuff. And then also I found out that the Woodwright shop is, the entire catalog is available instantly at pbs.org. So I've been binge watching that.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a both great and terrible discovery. Cause it's like, well, there goes my like 3 months. Basically,
only 33 seasons.
Yeah, seriously. And they're all good. And the crazy thing is, like, literally none of the technology he's using has really changed in that time period. It's kind of hilarious. Like, it's, yeah, his show is so amazing.
He's like the Robin Williams of woodworkers.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. That's a good analogy. He's an amazing dude for sure. Well, I have been watching a lot of Simone. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. I think it's actually Yetz, which she said it the other day, and I heard her say it. But you know, the queen of crappy robots. I guess this is a no cussing show. I forgot. But
Is it okay?
Yeah, I should have said that earlier, I guess. But she's just awesome. I think she is really got a fun style, and I just love that she's encouraging people to try to make stuff, like, even if it is not good. You know, she's absolutely hilarious, and obviously this whole scene is pretty devoid of females for the most part, so I'd love to see, you know, women who make stuff. I just think it's really cool. You know, Laura Kampf and April and all this, you know, Darvin Orver. I mean, it's cool to see them out there because, you know, like, I know looking at my demographics, it's like 95% dudes. So, you know, we need some more lady makers, I think. So, her stuff's just awesome. And now she's doing stuff with like Adam Savage and just living an amazing, cool life. So, yeah, she's awesome. How about you, Zach?
I have been reading a lot of like blacksmithing stuff because I've been anticipating that forge that just showed up an hour ago for like the past week. So that's some metallurgy stuff. I'm thinking about ordering a book. Still reading up on a lot of designers. I actually put out my first designer blog in the series, which I'm going to be doing like once a week on my website, where I pick a designer and kind of talk about them and showcase some of their builds. So that was cool. I had a lot of fun working on that blog. But yeah, that's kind of what I've been delving into.
Yeah, that was a cool blog, man. That was good.
I'm going to build that bookshelf, by the way.
Nice.
So, nice. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I can't remember now. I consume way too much media over the course of a week. unless I've seen it like within the last 2 hours, it's very hard for me to remember.
Got back from vacation, so the last 3 days I've watched like 300 YouTube videos. Jeez. Trying to catch up on everything I missed.
Man, that's nuts. That's awesome. Cool. Well, I guess let's close it out with Tool of the Week. So I know mine. It's been a tool I've been putting off forever, and it's the card scraper. And I don't know why I've been waiting. I think I was intimidated about the whole burnishing thing. You know, I watched a bunch of videos on it, and it seemed way more complex than I needed to. Although, shout out to Guy from Guy's Woodshop. He's in the live chat. He did a really good video on it a couple weeks ago. That was a nice kind of summation of the process. But I just
Did you see Matt Cremona's video on it?
Maybe. I think so. Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, I've watched like most of Matt's stuff, I'm pretty sure, but yeah, I'll check it out. I did kind of just splurge and buy the Veritas variable angle burnisher or whatever. So basically it's foolproof now. It's, you know, it's like as automated as it possibly could be. And so literally the first time I've ever used a card scraper, I'm getting these like beautiful shavings, like these little pillowy things that just kind of, you know, float away and, you know, nice smooth surface. So yeah, it's an amazing tool and just great for like I had laid out the lines of what I wanted the glass to be cut for the river table with Sharpie, which was a stupid choice, but Sharpie is really hard to remove. But man, card scraper, done, like no yep. problem. So yeah, that's a
teenage alcohol will take off too.
Oh really?
Yep.
Huh? Even on wood?
Well, it's your best bet using chemicals. Huh. I don't know how. It probably depends on how porous the wood is, but for removing, I mean, it's an alcohol. Sharpies are alcohol-based ink, so
yeah.
Okay. Alcohol. I was gonna say acetone, but yeah, denatured alcohol.
Napalm.
Jack's better at that stuff than me.
Yeah.
Blowtorch.
Grinding disc. That will be good. yeah, that is a. So, do you guys? This is kind of off topic with this. Well, not off topic, but kind of detailed, but. So the angle, you know, this variable angle thing, there's like an infinite number of angles between like 0 and 20 degrees that I can set it to. Do you guys like have an angle you use?
Right
or?
There. That angle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the angle doesn't matter because it's whatever you hold the card scraper at.
Gotcha. Okay.
If the angle on the card scraper is different, then you just turn the card scraper forward a little bit more.
I've found that it's really easy to do too much burnishing, though. Like,
yeah.
Putting, if you burnish it too much, it curls back, and you really have to, like, have a...
Oh, and
like,
you can also work harden the burr if you do it too much, and it will actually become brittle and snap off on you.
Huh. Cool. Well, there you go. All right. Who else?
You go ahead.
I've been using my least used chisel. It's an inch and a half chisel from Harbor Freight. And I'm loving the thing. It's just great to... I'm hogging off a large amount of material, carving out handles on the frame saw I'm working on. And just having a massive wide chisel that I can pound on. Almost like a slick, just fun to really hammer on something and remove material fast.
Yeah.
In a very carefully controlled manner, of course.
That is a big chisel, for sure.
Well, all right. Favorite tool of the week? I don't know. Me? no. Probably my jointer. I've been working on that Roubaud with these big, heavy... 2x5s of red oak, and I've been giving my 8-inch joiner a workout with that, but it's coming out great. That or my number 4 smoothing plane. I've been really getting into using more hand tools, and I've really honed that plane down where I can take pretty awesome shavings off of curly hard maple or curly white oak and not have any tear out. So that's an exciting step for me. So either my joiner or my number 4 smoother.
What kind of smoother is it?
What brand joiner or smoother?
Smoother.
It's a Stanley Bailey number 604. Sorry. It's like, I don't know, from 1896 or something like that.
Nice.
Happiness.
I have two because one's kind of weird. So today when I was doing my chair measuring at the store, I needed to figure out, I found a chair I really liked and the back was like at an angle and I'm like, man, how can I figure out what angle this is? Well, there's an app. I searched inclinometer So I'm in the store and people are looking at me funny because I'm like holding my cell phone up against the back of the chair, like figuring out what angle like the back is leaning at. I just thought that was a pretty cool tool that might be useful for somebody. There's free apps that you can pretty much use your cell phone as a level. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yep.
But as far as like a normal tool, just the magnetic welding corner, the welding magnets. That's something I don't really think about very often, but I use them all the time. If you weld stuff, you should have a few, because they're handy.
So how do you keep those from getting completely covered in shavings? Because that is my trouble. It's like not even square because of all the stupid shavings on it.
I don't. Mine are always covered because I have no collection whatsoever, so everything in my shop is covered, and my magnets usually get buried. But... two things. You can either grab a rag, and usually if you push like use your hand, you can contour it and you can push most of them off with the rag, get most of them off that way, and then I blast them off with an air compressor.
Yeah, that was a poor design. Like, it needs to be one of those magnets where you can just like turn the switch and turn it off, because that would be amazing.
Then you'd need a battery, probably.
No. Like, those mag switches, have you seen those things? They're like magic.
Yeah, but it actually pulls the magnet away from the surface.
Like retract and
inside the box.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, it's never an issue with me. I can, between wiping it off really quick and then hitting it with the air compressor, it's usually good enough.
I normally grab a scrap of steel and just scrape off the stuff that's right on the edge and use it.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like a pain. I didn't anticipate that being like a thing. I don't know.
But, or you could put them in a drawer.
Well, mine is usually from it sitting on my welding table. So like I'm, you know, like grinding the bevel, getting ready for the weld, and like it's while I'm literally in the process of welding that's getting covered up, you know. So it's cuz I'm usually using my belt grinder for that. I stupidly have my belt grinder mounted so the, like, you know, exhaust or whatever you want to call it, like all the shavings are shooting down onto the surface of the weld table. So then if that magnet is anywhere near it, it's like ridiculous. It's a pain. So anyway.
Well, the Johnny solution would just be to buy a whole nother welding station for the other side of the shop.
Yeah. I just need to send out
new magnets
my
for
fabrication.
Every practice.
Yeah. Just man, I'm gonna become that guy, I guess. So I'll embrace it.
I gotta give you
that. Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I put out my shop tour like last week, and that was something I was actually worried about, was getting a lot of crap because of the tools I have. But people were very nice. I was surprised. The internet rarely surprises me in that like direction, and it was good. So. Yeah,
I think the only tool that's new in my shop is my table saw. Everything else is from like 1992.
Yeah. I think the only tool that's old in my shop is my jointer. It's a weird shop for sure. But I love it. Cool.
I don't know if I have any new tools.
Yeah, I was going to say. I'm very, very opposite of James. They were all
some
made
that are over 200 years old.
Yeah, mostly all made in this millennium. So, yeah. Cool. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this week. So, William, thanks so much for being on, man. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Well, you need to get down to North Carolina sometime. We can collaborate.
Anytime you want to.
Yeah, we're not like terribly far from each other, like 6 hours.
No, I think we're
like
the closest out of. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish you were going to the Atlanta.
I know, man.
I know. I'm gonna be out in California. Actually, I'm gonna be hanging out with Chris Salamone and Kyle Toth.
Well, you suck. Two of my faves.
And maybe
right
Sean
there.
Rubino.
Nice. Man. Yeah. That'll be fun. Cool.
I'll be
well,
hanging out with James Wright and Johnny Brooks. So
yeah.
There.
And Izzy Swan and Jimmy Duresta. So booyah.
Booyah. East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, seriously. Cool. Well, in case you guys don't know, we have a new Patreon page. So check that out for sure if you want to support the show. Again, big shout out to Make, Build, Modify. And last, we got our new app. So if you guys haven't already downloaded that, it's completely free of charge. So just go ahead and get it. So thanks again for listening. And until next week, happy building, everybody.
See you later.